Farming Programme with Araquip Steel Stockholders, Withambrook Industrial Estate Grantham. For all your steel needs, call their friendly experts.
The Week in Agriculture. This is the Farming Programme.
Good morning, I'm Andy Marsh, filling in for Steve Orchard for a second week. Yep, they've let me back. Steve returns a week today. Now, this week we find out all about so-called elephant grass and how it's helping to create power.
It's a renewable source of energy. The benefits for the people around me is I'm powering their homes.
We also discuss a soil treatment made up of waste bits of fish. I kid you not.
So it's full of nutrients, amino acids and trace elements. It basically maximises the growing conditions in a healthy, organic way.
And a scheme which is looking to highlight new ideas that can improve efficiency in the farming sector.
We wanted a programme that would foster innovation and empower individuals to make meaningful contributions to the agricultural industry.
Plus, there's the usual agronomy with Sean and the crop report, plus the weather for the week ahead.
The Week in Agriculture. This is the Farming Programme.
Let's take a look at the news. Some worries about blue tongue continue with more cases found across the Lincolnshire and Humber region. It means the control zone restricting the movement of livestock has been extended. It now goes almost as far as Boston and Lincoln, and to the west takes in the Isle of Axholme, so bigger than last week. Last Monday, Louth Livestock Market was closed. Tomorrow it will reopen for the sale of prime and cull cattle and the sale of prime lambs. Now, they all must be booked in prior to the market. And if you fancy going on a vineyard tour and wine tasting, there's a session at Burtonped Wardine near Sleaford from 12 till 3 this coming Thursday. It's been hosted by the Women in Wellies Group. And there are details on that on the Lincolnshire Rural Support Network website.
The Week in Agriculture. This is the Farming Programme.
Now, it seems a little bit unlikely, but a soil improver has been created from waste bits of fish. Testing on sea to soil has thrown up some rather interesting results. Grant James is the product's business development manager. I asked him what it is and how it was developed.
Globally, the total fish consumption grew by 122% between 1990 up to 2018. So basically, 96% of shoppers now buy fish. And COVID-19 accelerated that lifestyle change. So more fish equals more waste. So what have we done with the waste? Well, Pelagia Limited is a leading UK producer of fish products for over a century, and 100% of the fish is used. So Sea to Soil is a brand. It's an organic liquid fertiliser developed for agricultural use on the land and farmers in the UK and Ireland. So it's full of nutrients, amino acids and trace elements. It basically maximises the growing conditions in a healthy, organic way.
And when was this first put together?
Approximately about 3 years ago. It was looked at by certain people in Pelagia and they decided that we need to find a different way of doing this rather than getting rid of it in the various ways they got rid of it before.
Now, you've done various tests on this recently and you've discovered, well, there are certain major advantages. Just in layman's terms, if you can outline what those are.
It promotes microbial activity in the soil, which basically gives better growth and structure to the plant. So it's a huge advantage to the plant. It helps the plant grow, be stress-free and grow in the right direction and utilise nitrogen better.
And when it comes to the cabbage stem flea beetle, it's able to help in that direction.
Yes, it was something we weren't expecting. It's become a deterrent. And so at different rates, at different timings, it does seem to deter the cabbage stem flea beetle, which is an interesting one. We're now going to go on and develop further trials with NAAB in a field situation, because this was in a glasshouse situation last year. And so we're going to develop that and look at that more. It's on the market now, and we're building our distributor network up as we speak. We've had a test bed with farmers in the Lincolnshire area, and we've had some great responses from that, some great testimonials come in. We're just trying at the moment to work forward with the business and grow it. As you can appreciate, it's still in its infancy and we're still doing a lot of trials and research on it, but it looks very promising. At the moment, we're 31% ahead of where we were last year in a bad farming year. So I think we're doing okay at the moment.
We talked about the trials. What came out of it? Was that a surprise, or are you looking at things and you're thinking, yeah, this was as good as expected? Or maybe you want to make changes or what?
First of all, we had some farmers notice it, and the farmers on the test farmer side basically said, well, we've got this interesting, it looks like it affects Camis semflea beetle, it looks like it does this, it looks like it does that. And so we took that information and we put it in a situation where we could trial it with NIAB and we could trial it with Nottingham University. We sort of expected them, but didn't expect them to be as good as they turned out to be. And so this is why we're now investing more money, further trials with Nottingham University and further trials with NIAB.
And what advantages, I mean, obviously farmers want the soil to be as useful as possible, but if you can just outline the major advantages to farmers of using this.
Well, the interesting thing, it's a bit of a jigsaw, really. I mean, using our product and then going minimum tillage and then going crop diversity, cover crops in the winter, increases the microbial activity. And by increasing the microbial activity, you're giving the plant more chance against stress, against cold conditions in the winter. It grows better. It utilizes the nitrogen better. It utilizes the phosphate and the potash better. So the whole plant becomes a lot healthier. It's a jigsaw of different things going on, and we're just part of that jigsaw.
Now, this coming Tuesday, there's a chance to find out more about the crop miscanthus, commonly known as elephant grass, and how it's been used in a renewable energy plant in Brigg. Colin Chappell is the Hibblestow farmer behind it, who explains.
So it comes from savannah land, and it's called elephant grass because it can hide an elephant in it. We bring school kids here, and the first bit is, can we see the elephants, please? You've got the grass for the elephants. Where are the elephants? It's a crop you plant once. It will last up to 25 years. And you don't need to do anything else other than plant it and harvest it.
That sounds very simple, but I guess it isn't quite that easy.
Establishment is key. You've got to get the establishment right. In the old days of growing miscanthus, we used to scatter it on the surface and sort of incorporate it as best we could and just hope it would grow. We tend to do it more precision planting now. So they are odd-shaped, very difficult to handle at times, very difficult to individualise.
But once you get there, once it's established, there are some major benefits. If you just tell us about those.
Very, very low maintenance. You hardly need anything once established. You do not put fertiliser, you do not put chemistry on it. It's basically an organic crop per se. It is a massive biodiversity plus. The amount of wildlife and red list species for birds, mammals, etc. that we have harboured in within our miscanthus crops is huge. Plus, for me personally, it is carbon sink. So by which I mean we are sequestering carbon in the soil. It is a natural process, like most plants, and we are storing carbon in the soil.
So very environmentally friendly, but also you've got a deal with Brigg Renewable Energy Power there. Just tell us a bit of detail about that and what this is used for.
It's a renewable source of energy. It gets burnt at Brigg plant. They heat water, and the water then becomes steam, and they harvest the steam to power turbines, which provides electricity for the local area. The benefits for the people around me is I'm powering their homes.
And what about the kind of land it can be grown on? I gather it's the case that perhaps if some areas are flood affected, that it can still grow there.
Very poignant crop this year. So I farm in the Ancombe Valley. The Ancombe Valley has been severely flooded this year to the point that some of my neighbours haven't actually had a harvest this year. Miscanthus is a plant you crop, and you don't need to worry about it. It will stand being flooded. It will grow perfectly well on heavy clay soils. It will also grow equally as well on sand. And the question I'm always asked is, which does it do better on? Depends on the season. In a wet year like this, sand would be better. In a dry year like we had in the 90s, it would have been better on the clay. But that's just farming. That's what farming is. Some years are better for certain soil types.
Now, if people are interested in actually seeing what you've got there and finding out more about the process, you have an event this coming Tuesday. Just tell us about that.
Yeah, so this coming Tuesday, 9:30 till 12 o'clock roughly, Terra Vesta, which are the overarching company that deals with the process of getting my crop to the power station, they're holding an event to try and encourage new growers into a crop to talk about the benefits, how you get it established, to have a look at my crop in particular. There's a lovely, fantastic crop down my drive, which is growing really strongly. Just to add at this point, really, with the event as well, our subsidies have all but disappeared. We as growers have to farm differently now. We can't do the same old crops in the same old way anymore. This is a relatively new crop to the UK. It's a new way of producing a crop, a new way of thinking about growing a crop. For quite a high initial outlay, you've got a crop that will last you 20, 25 years, is resilient to climate change, almost all extent. As farmers, Andy, we tend to get a crop and we want to harvest a crop every single year and have a certain return every single year. Climate change is forcing us to change the way we think. You might not get year in, year out for a start guaranteed returns, but after year two and year three, you have almost guaranteed a return every single year from then on till year 25. That's just a novel, different way of thinking about things that farmers often don't think beyond the certain harvest year.
Just to recap, that's on at 9:30 this coming Tuesday at Gander Farm. There's a Tora Brigg renewable energy plant included in that. Time now for agronomy with Sean, who's always pleased to see me. Morning, Sean.
Yes, morning, Andy. You still here? So pretty autumnal then this week. Pea soup fog Tuesday morning. Day temperatures down to 13 or 14, then back up into the low 20s by midweek, showing us that the last dregs of summer are still here for now. The night's feeling noticeably colder, though. Not quite a rime frost, but down to just 3 degrees a couple of times this week. And of course, today's the autumn equinox, 22nd of September. That means that from now, the nights are going to be longer than the days, and things are really changing. Winter draws on, as they say. Leaves turning on the trees and the hedges, heavy dewy mornings, really nippy at times. So thoughts turn into drilling in these autumnal conditions, and the few drops of rain that we have seen over the last 7 or 8 days, coupled to these cooling temperatures and shorter days, means that we're in the very earliest stage of blackgrass emergence, if at all. Over the coming 3 weeks or so, stale seed beds should start to fill up with a good flush. Remember, it's 500 blackgrass plants a square metre, which is considered a flush. So taking out 20 or 30 blackgrass plants a square metre twice in a fortnight is still the start of the first flush, as it were. So hugely important you give these blackgrass seed beds time to give the blackgrass itself time to come through, ready for a squirt of glyphosate ahead of putting in the wheat and the barley. Blackgrass only just thinking about moving, largely as a result of the season, how dry it is, how dry it's been over the last few weeks. And just like some of the rape seeds that went in to the drier Heavyland seed bed, the blackgrass seeds too have also been sat in that dust, so chit they have not. Add to that a relatively high dormancy and the fact that we're still not even in the last week of September, and there you are. I know we bang on about this every year, and I know you're fed up of hearing it, but unfortunately there are already several of those blackgrass fields which have already been drilled, and they're going to have to rely upon a really large and well-timed stack of pre-emergence herbicides, and probably just as importantly a big dose of luck in order to stop that blackgrass coming up thick and fast now that the crop's in, not to mention the risk of BYDV and the higher threat of disease. What fun this is. The best herbicide we have for blackgrass is glyphosate, but glyphosate obviously no longer an option once the crop's drilled. It's not that I'm trying to be difficult or clever, it's accumulated wisdom born out of scores of trials, years of experience, mistakes and a lifetime of regrets really, that tells us not to drill that blackgrass land until at least a couple of weeks time into October, because the main blackgrass germination period is this and the next 2 to 3 weeks or so. And as I say, the blackgrass is only just thinking about breaking dormancy and coming through. Now, I fully understand it's your farm, it's your choice, and my advice or our advice is there to be ignored because of what happened last autumn. And I've heard all the reasons why you've already drilled some of your blackgrass land and why you're starting, regardless of all of that, tomorrow. Once again this year, as indeed I hear every single year, you know what I mean, you know what I'm talking about. If it comes wet like it did last year, we'll never get on again this autumn. That's happened twice in the last 36 years. I've worked it all over and I've killed it all, so I'm going to go and drill it. Well, you haven't killed it if it hasn't germinated. They're not bad fields for blackgrass. Well, you know they are, I know they are, so telling me they aren't and expecting miracles from herbicides and your agronomist alike, because actually we both know they are blackgrass fields, is only going to end in frustration, disappointment and some rather impressive blackgrass. We'll just bump up the pre-em brew. That's another firm favourite, but bumping up a pre-em brew when it's already bumped up as far as it'll bump really isn't an option. It seems to me that the badness of any given blackgrass field and the concern over the importance of blackgrass to the crop seems to vary depending upon how keen you are to go drilling and how many fields you've still got to drill. I understand the futility of trying to hold back the tide of a farmer who wants to crack on and go drilling, and I know from over 35 years doing this job that some things are best just accepted as being inevitable. But like most, if not all, of my colleagues, we're just giving you the information you know to be the best advice, and it's up to you what you do with it, or indeed where you tell us to pop it. We've clearly got some good chemistry, but they're not magic chemicals, and all of those other things, including delaying the drilling, utilising stale seedbeds, taking out a flush of blackgrass before the crop goes in the ground, and you know this deep down, are absolutely vital to allow even the best of our armoury to work. The cultural method, the seedbed cultivation directly influenced the seedbed condition. Seed rates needs to be based on those seedbeds as well as the variety you're putting in, the time of drilling, the blackgrass threat, the slug risk, the germination levels, the 1,000 seed weight, and a realistic target plant population. Aiming for 125 plants a square metre in the last week of September will not be sufficient. Aiming for 375 to 400 plants a square metre in the last week of September, that's going to be way too thick. So talk to your advisor and do the numbers. The 1,000 seed weight multiplied by target plants per square metre divided by percentage germination multiplied by 100 plus the percentage of expected field losses. That's your seed rate in kilos per hectare. But assume absolutely nothing and don't just go out and put the same seed rate on that you put on this time last year. Know what you're dealing with. A 1,000 seed weight difference of 10 grams, so say between 44 and 54 grams, is about 30 kilos of seed per hectare. Now, if you do decide to go, pre-emergence means pre-emergence, and that means applying the pre-emergence herbicide within 24 to 48 hours maximum of drilling, and that's non-negotiable and absolutely crucial in these conditions. You have to put a layer of herbicide onto the seedbed so that any blackgrass seed that chits and roots in that herbicide layer is going to be controlled. Delaying your pre-em so you can go and drill a big block and then go back in a week or so and spray it all in one go, with conditions such as they are, warm soil still way over 15, we've now got moisture and you've just pulled a drill through it, which will have caused that flash of UV light into the seedbed, and that in itself will have encouraged the blackgrass to get a spurt on as well. And with warm damp soil, the wheat and the barley you've just drilled as well as that blackgrass is going to chit in a matter of hours. And once those blackgrass roots start to head down and away from the surface, you're always going to be chasing them. So drill, roll, spray. That's by far the best approach. Cabbage stem flea beetle exploding in oilseed rape and slugs still rampant in places in the rape. So don't forget about these slugs. Clearly, the bigger oilseed rape plants are unlikely to suffer much more from direct feeding from the cabbage stem flea beetle. But these slugs and the pigeons are now a much bigger problem as the growth starts to slow over the next few weeks as these nights draw in. Plenty of carabid beetles and soldier beetles after those slugs, parasitic fungi, parasitic wasps such as Microtonus brassicae are predating on those cabbage stem flea beetle adults, which are now going to start to slow down. They're all doing their bit out there, but they do need our help, so do keep your eyes peeled. And I have absolutely no doubt that drilling will be very much underway by this time next week. And all joking apart, do please try to hold off the blackgrassiest fields for another week or two if you possibly can, for all our sakes and for all our sanity. It seems that the swallows are still here, and we really shouldn't be drilling wheat while the swallows are still here, should we? I've got a feeling I know what the answer to this next question is going to be, but let's see what the next 7 days bring.
Thank you, Sean, and he returns the same time next week with Steve. Now, still to come today, an initiative to find new ideas to improve farming efficiency, plus the crop report and the weather for the week ahead.
The Farming Programme with Araquip Steel Stockholders, Withambrook Industrial Estate Grantham, supplying the region for over 40 years.
Of course, farmers are always on the hunt for new ideas, research on new ways of using technology to try and improve efficiency. And a project has just been launched asking anyone with something to share to come forward. A number will be chosen to showcase their ideas at the January Oxford Farming Conference. One of the conference's directors, Jude McCann, tells us more.
It's really an opportunity for individuals who have an exciting idea. They may want to share a new innovative approach that they're doing either in their farm business, maybe it's research that they're involved in. And really, we give an opportunity for the up to 6 inspiring innovators to have the stage at the OFC on the first day to really pitch their ideas to the audience of the Oxford Farming Conference, which draws in between 600 to 700 people every year.
So quite significant. Basically, it sounds as if any new ideas that will help improve the farming sector are welcome, if I hear you correctly.
Absolutely. So any individual of any age from the agriculture, food, rural industry can apply to be an Oxford Inspiring Innovator. Whether they're an entrepreneur, a researcher, a deep thinker or a scientist, we welcome applications from anyone with a good idea or concept that will support the sector, regardless of their background or business size.
How did this initially come about?
So we're partnering with McCain this year on this Inspiring Innovators. They did support the Oxford Farming Conference last year. year, and McCain's have come in and partnered with us to deliver this. We pitched the idea where we wanted a programme that would foster innovation, support sustainable farming practices, and empower individuals to make meaningful contributions to the agricultural industry. When we shared that with McCain's, they were delighted to get on board and have our sponsors for this year's Inspiring Innovators. OFC is renowned for gathering the brightest minds and most influential figures in British agriculture, bringing them all together. We think the Inspiring Innovators program, it really aligns perfectly with the conference's mission, which is about promoting inclusive, diverse and challenging discussions.
And for those who are selected to go forward to the conference, there'll be a chance to pitch their ideas, and also they get to network and speak to people. They're going to be around at the conference for the whole time.
Even before the conference, there'll be sort of a skills training day at McCain Foods facility in Scarborough. Then the participants who are successful, they will get a full conference ticket. Also includes accommodation, allowing them to further engage and network with all the conference participants, up to 700 delegates. So fundamentally, it's a platform to share their concept in front of an esteemed audience, which could open the doors for them and help them to take the next step.
We're often hearing just how important it is to look at food security and improve that in the UK. To what end do you think new technology and new ideas can play a part in that?
There's massive challenges ahead for the industry, and this year's conference theme is Facing Change, Finding Opportunities. New ideas, new technology, new innovations is crucial. We're in a sector that is always changing, but the pace of change is quite incredible at the moment. The demands for food globally is growing significantly. The issues around climate change and environmental impacts all need to be seriously considered. We think this is a great opportunity for some new inspiring innovator to share their ideas with the OFC in January 25.
And finally, if somebody does have an idea that they think qualifies for this, just the general details, what they need to do.
So go to the Oxford Farming Conference website, that's ofc.org.uk, and you will find all the information. The closing date is the end of this month, the 30th of September. So we encourage anyone with passion or drive in innovation to apply, whether they're farmers, researchers, anyone who wants to make a difference to the UK agriculture, please do get in touch with us. OFC website, get your applications in sooner rather than later.
Market reports.
Today, there's no actual livestock market report because, as we mentioned earlier, last week, livestock market didn't take place due to the blue tongue outbreak. Just to recap, Louth Market will be opening tomorrow for the sale of prime and cull cattle and also the sale of prime lambs. They must, however, be booked in prior to the market. Moving on, let's get the grain update with Open Fields' Alice Killam. Morning, Alice.
Good morning, Andy. The markets this week have left us slightly disappointed once again. I read one commentator who wrote that we've spent 3 weeks trying to make some more climbs, only to lose it all in a day and a half. I share his frustration. Other than some pretty mediocre US weekly sales numbers, I'm not really sure of the reason for the funds, we assume it is them, to hop back on the bus and start selling the US markets down again. The rest of us have followed and we're back now right at the bottom of the range. Very frustrating when you glance around the other stories across the world. I was reminded yesterday that we're still only in September, and whilst this is true, it would be nice to see some kind of sustained rally, even if it was just for a week or so. There is a school of thought that nobody will want to own November futures at anything like these numbers at the beginning of November. I guess we are seeing this a little with the NovMay spread widening, but I'm not sure that this is a UK fault as to why the market has fallen back to 180. This is a global story. For me, it is based around the huge crop which is expected in the US and the severe lack of buying from our Chinese friends, a perceived lack of demand. Export numbers published this week don't really support this drop either. Russian exports are continuing at a big pace, over 5 million tonnes in August, with something similar projected in September too. Ukraine are going like mad also, confirming again this week that they have a cap at 16.2 million tonnes of export for the whole season. They're over 5 million tonnes already and it's September. On the flip side, the biggest EU exporter of wheat, France, are now forecasting export numbers of under 10 million tonnes for the season because of their poor crop. In a normal year, this number would be 18 million tonnes. We know that maize yields in the EU and the Black Sea are going down and not up, So we will either get A, a small lift back up in values later on in the season when some of the exports currently taking place begin to dry up, or B, remain stuck where we are if the US numbers are as large as some are predicting. To be fair, we did see a little lift up with the carry thrown in to help. I do believe we will get another chance at this, but even I must keep my expectations towards the lower end of the scale, barring something non-grain related to developing around the world. For the moment though, we need to find a different rut to become comfortable in. Close to home and the UK market, not much has changed. The demand is actually feed wheat, which prior to Thursday morning's drop in futures, had actually moved up a little, pushing the hard and soft markets with them. Milling wheat, more specifically movement of spot or spot plus one, is exactly the opposite, as business transacted a few months ago has now arrived in the UK for discharge. Because of this, spot premiums have fallen, though not many of us would rule them widening out again at the turn of the year. Interestingly, we've also heard some anecdotal noise about some of the imported grains being rejected at the mills upon arrival. It will be interesting to see how this develops. Barley has stopped going down, which is good news. The export out of the East Coast has started, which is also good news. We now need the business to keep going. This will help get rid of the obvious surplus of barley that we have, and if we export the quality barleys, there'll be no need for the feed barley to have to compete at the bargain basement numbers that we saw at harvest. Let's hope we get a good run. Beans are still being cut and probably will be going for another few days yet. Finding homes that will take the wet ones is clearly going to be the challenge here, with forward carries being offered in a similar fashion to barley, where you do have the ability to dry them. Although I do appreciate that this is easier said than done with peas and beans. Some guide prices circa Friday morning. Feed wheat, October 175 to 185, February 180 to 190, May 190 to 200. Feed barley, October 150 to 160, February 155 to 165, and May 160 to 170. All seed rape, October 380 to 390, February 385 to 395, and May 390 to 400. As usual, please call for firm values.
Thanks, Alice.
The Farming Programme. 5-day forecast.
Now, this week we may well see just a little bit of rain. Largely cloudy today, but there is the chance of showers at times, highs of 19. Tomorrow, probably the wettest day, a fair amount of rain throughout the day, cooler, highs of 15. Tuesday, largely cloudy but mostly dry. Later on in the week, some showers and also cooler, with top temperatures of around 12 or 13 Celsius. That's it from me for this week. Steve will return next week as per usual. Keep listening.
The Farming Programme with Araquip Steel Stockholders, Withambrook Industrial Estate Grantham. BSI ISO 9001 accredited.